Well, it's a great privilege to come and talk to you at this time. I wasn't really sure who's going to be here. We're kind of gauged to talk at various different levels. And then on Christmas Day, I felt the Lord gave me something extra to add to the talk, so bear with me. I'm wondering if I could have a volunteer to open two presents. A volunteer. Okay, come on up, Ben. Right. So, Ben, could you open the one you think is most attractively wrapped? There's no... So open that one. Let's see what's inside this very attractively wrapped present. Could you open the lid and see what's inside? Don't spill it, please. So what is it?
Sprout.
I love the expression sprout. And yeah, this is the peelings which I kept back. Okay. Now, could you open this present, which is not so attractively wrapped? A chocolate bar. Well, you can keep that one if your parents allow that. I won't give your parents the sprouts. And but thank you very much. And I will give this at the back anyway for everybody else who wants to have some. Thank you indeed. Hopefully that will make a little bit more sense. Now, when I first came to this church about 20-odd years ago, I think there was a nativity play in which the key song was, "The best present of all is Jesus." And I think there was somebody who starred as Twinkle the Star. I remember that one. So if we could just put up the first slide, if that's possible. So this is a meditation on what it costs Jesus to become a man. And I think the verse that most sums up the idea of Jesus as a present is probably one of the most famous verses in the Bible. So if we turn to the next slide. And I usually use this verse whenever I'm doing my sort of speaking because I think this packs such a powerful message. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life." It speaks about the love of God, that he wants to give us all everlasting life. And so I thought it would be quite nice as a congregation to be able to speak this out ourselves. So let's join me in speaking this together. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life." That sums up the gospel in a nutshell, which is why it has become one of the most famous of all the verses in the Bible. But I want to now consider, what did it cost Jesus to come to earth? Okay? I know we're not supposed to ask how much a present costs, but in this case I think it is actually useful to ask the question, what did it cost him? And to do that, I want us to look at Philippians chapter 2, verse 6. Next slide. And in this one, we will see the beginnings of what it cost him. "Who, being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God." What did it mean for him to be God? And I want us to consider two sections of the Bible. If we look at the next slide, John 1:1-4. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Think about it. Jesus created everything. Now, yesterday there was a spacecraft that was launched with the James Webb telescope, and that's going to replace Hubble to help us see how vast and large is this universe. And to think the baby in a manger created that. I love the fact you chose number 17, because number 17 says this. Lo, within a manger lies he who built the starry skies. He who throned in heights sublime sits among the cherubim. Remember that this baby was the creator of the heavens and the earth. If we look at the next section, which is Colossians 1, 15 to 17. He, that is Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things consist. Do you know how amazingly complex every cell of your body is? There are thousands of molecular machines working in every cell of your body. And the information that your cell has to be such that it can make those machines and then inform those machines of what they have to do and when to do it. And you have trillions of these cells in your body, and all of these cells have to come from one cell when you were first conceived. That's an awful lot of information to be packed into one very, very small space. Isn't God very intelligent? And the thing I want to think about is this. Jesus knew he was God when he was on the earth. If you remember, when he was in the temple, he said to his parents, "Did you not know I needed to be about my Father's business?" When he spoke to Nicodemus, he said, "Look, I know what I'm talking about because I came from heaven." He was explaining to the Jewish crowd, "Look, I know what I'm talking about. I came from heaven." You know, and he eventually ends up saying, "Before Abraham, I am." You know, when the lepers were healed, 10 of them, one of them returned and worshipped him. Now, in every other situation, human beings have always said, "Don't worship me, I'm not God." Jesus said, "Where are the other 9? He expected to be worshipped. When he came into Jerusalem and everyone was praising him, the Pharisees turned round and said, "Oh, you should be telling them to stop praising you." And he said, "No, if they stopped, the very stones would cry out." Jesus was possessed of the knowledge that he was God. And that's quite interesting. Maggie and I were reading Luke, what chapter it is, the story about Mary and Martha. And it's quite interesting, the story about Mary and Martha. You know, Martha's busy doing everything, trying to serve God, and Mary just sits. And you know, just you also think to yourself, "Look, I kind of side with Martha here." But Mary sits and listens to Jesus. Now, as a teacher, I long for pupils to sit and listen. I mean, really listen. I sometimes have them for the first 5 minutes, and then you can see them wandering off. It really, really ministered to Jesus that Mary sat and listened, because Jesus had so much to say. You know, you said to the lady, the woman at the well, if you knew who had asked you for a drink, if you only knew who I was, you know, bless them. Imagine being in the family with Mary and the brothers. And here's Jesus, and there's his brothers. Now, his brothers are not saved. They're not regenerated. They'll be full of rivalries and jealousies and pettiness. And Jesus has to live this life amongst people who don't understand who he is. Really don't understand who he is. But Mary understood enough that the most important thing is to listen to what he has to say and to hear him. And remember, on the Mount of Transfiguration, God says, this is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. Hear him. It is the greatest honor you can give to God is to actually listen to him. It's really, really important. And I have this vision of Jesus coming to earth, knowing that he is God. If we turn to the next, go back to the next slide, go to the next slide. And now we're back into Philippians chapter 2. So knowing that he is God, he says this, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men. And the thing that struck me was this, next slide, Hebrews 10:5. Therefore, when he came into the world, he said, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you have prepared for me. Have you thought about this? Jesus humbled himself to take on a human body, which means he got tired, he would feel pain, he would feel all the frustrations that come with having a human body. I find that absolutely amazing. Next slide. But we go to Isaiah 53, we do see a bit more about his humility. For he grew up before him like a young plant, like a root out of a dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, no beauty that we should desire him. Think of it. He came into a poor family in a town that was known to be of no good report. Did anything good ever come out of Nazareth? He was considered a social outcast because he was born out of wedlock. And the people of Nazareth knew that. He deliberately divested himself of all his glory and lived like that for 30 years before his public ministry in an utterly insignificant situation. We'll turn to the next slide. Isaiah 53 goes on to say that he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and as one from whom we hid our face. He was despised and we esteemed him not. As I said, his own family did not esteem him. The people of Nazareth were offended by him and at one point tried to kill him. Jesus felt that the people of Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum never really believed what he was saying. He said, woe to them. It was funny, we went to Israel, and I was hoping to get a bed and breakfast in Capernaum. So I assumed there was going to be a town called Capernaum in northern Galilee. No, there are ruins, but there's nowhere there. You will not find Bethsaida, you will not find Chorazin, and you will not find Capernaum. They've all gone. Tiberias you will find. But all these places have gone. He was rejected and despised. If we turn to the next slide. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself. I love the AV version of this, because the idea of contradiction of sinners. He made heaven and earth, and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the religious leaders kept on contradicting him. How frustrating must that be? He said of them that you are the blind leading the blind. And the trouble is, you don't know you're blind. And he had to go through 3 years of public ministry with increasing hostility from the very people who ought to have known who he was. Because when you read the Old Testament, it's pretty obvious who Jesus is. It's pretty obvious this is the suffering servant. It is pretty obvious. You know, Jesus said, you can read the weather. You know what's coming with the weather. Why can't you read the times and see that I am the Messiah? Now, by the way, remember, they were actually without excuse because he performed mighty miracles right in front of them. He had performed everything required of the Messiah. And yet they still contradicted him to the point of killing him. And he lived with this day in, day out. And if we go to the next slide, and this is what such a meditation should lead us to do. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. And if you want a sort of title to this talk, is The Perseverance of the Saints. One of the great themes of the New Testament is, will you persevere? Will you carry on believing? Next slide. Yeah. Do not fear any of the things which you're about to suffer. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Next slide. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. And do remember that Jesus was tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. But he knows what we're going through. He knows, for each one of us, it's a different thing. It might be pain. It might be something else. It might be bereavement. It might be some particular part of your personality that you find a real struggle with. Jesus knows. What he asks is that, will you persevere? He'll give you the power to do it, but will you commit yourself to it? He who has an ear, next slide. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I'll give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. And what you'll notice in the book of Revelation is that for every one of the seven churches, there's the same injunction. He who overcomes. Now, my little addendum, which came on a talk on Christmas morning. One of the advantages to the children not being around and not preparing a Christmas meal, you actually do talk on Christmas morning. And Maggie and I were talking about the shepherds. And you know, we always say, oh, the shepherds were despised. And isn't it amazing that God came to the shepherds that were despised? Well, I suddenly thought to myself, this is outrageous that the shepherds should be despised. Of all the nations of the world, Israel should not be despising shepherds. What was the profession of Abraham? A shepherd. What was the profession of Isaac? A shepherd. What was the profession of Jacob? A shepherd. What was the profession of David before he became king? A shepherd. And if you want to go back to the very beginning, Abel's profession was a shepherd. Why were shepherds being despised in Israel? And I thought to myself, isn't it very interesting how the enemy will turn the truth upside down? Shepherds should have been honoured, not despised. And I thought to myself, are there truths that we have today that have been turned upside down? And I thought to myself, go right back to the beginning of the Bible. He created the male and female. There's a truth that's been turned upside down. And, you know, it's amazing because the way God created the woman is unique. The man and all the animals were created from the dust of the ground. The woman was created from the side of Adam when he was asleep. The second Adam, Jesus, was put to sleep on the cross. And out of the cross comes the second Eve, the church. God invested in male and female such immense significance. We see it in Ephesians, that the church and the woman are tied together. And the reason I thought this was important, because when we come to talk about the perseverance of the saints, part of that perseverance is against the opposition of ideas and thinking that contradicts the Bible. Remember, Jesus suffered the contradiction of sinners. He had to face for 3 years the onslaught of the religious leaders constantly saying literally the opposite of what God was saying. And Jesus said, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Look for justice and mercy. You haven't got it. And I think if we're going to persevere in this period of history, we need to have perseverance against the temptations that we will face in this life, but also against the worldview that will come against us. And so my sort of injunction for this coming year is run the race. Do not grow weary. God is with you. He'll give you the grace you need. But run the race.